everyone, and welcome back to Educators to Educators. This is episode 4. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Carrie Conover, and I just want to start off by thanking everyone for sharing Educators to Educators across the nation. Subscribers just keep going up and up, and I'm just so thrilled that people are reaching out and telling me how much they're getting out of Educators to Educators. If this is the first time you've joined us, the format of this podcast is two educators sitting down talking about three things that one educator feels that they can share out with the rest of you that can have impact on your teaching, student learning, on your building wide engagement of students. Today, I have such a special guest with me. Before I introduce her, I just want to kind of review who I've had on the podcast. So in episode number 2, I brought in Kelly. And Kelly was the woman that really pushed me to become a teacher. And she joined us on the podcast. I student taught underneath Kelly and learned so much from her. And so I thought it was only appropriate to ask my dear friend Leslie to join us today. Leslie was actually my, first student teacher that I ever had way back in the day. Leslie was part of the Illinois State University pipeline, and so she came up to Chicago her senior year and spent time in Chicago public schools teaching. And I'm so thrilled to have her today because Leslie's going to talk about English learners. She's so much experience with English learners in her classroom, and I'm really thrilled for her to share three things out to help English learners in your classroom succeed and be at their best. So Leslie, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get started, I would love for you to share with our audience just a little bit about you and your teaching background.
Okay. Well, I got my start with you way back when. I think it was 11 years ago now. After I student taught with you, I stayed at McCormick and we got to work together for a year. And then I continued my education at the time. It was English as a second language learners. And I went to UIC and got a degree in teaching ESL students because that was the main demographic we were teaching at the time. Since then, I moved to Nashville, and I've taught down here in 3 different schools in a variety of classrooms. I had no idea how diverse Nashville was until I got here, but I definitely love teaching English learners, and I definitely learned a lot from you, Carrie.
Aw, thanks, Leslie. Yeah, I was thinking back that first year that you were teaching full-time, our classrooms were next door to each other. How fun was that?
I know. I still have things marked with 306 on it. That's our classroom number before me.
Now, Leslie's going to be humble, and she's not going to tell all of you that last year she won Teacher of the Year at her school. So I know I was super proud of you. I loved seeing on Facebook that picture of your school sign with Teacher of the Year. So congratulations on that. And, you know, Leslie, you and I were having this email exchange back and forth preparing for tonight. And one of the things we were discussing is, you know, even as I've traveled across the nation, you hear ELL, ESL, EL, so many different terminology for English learners. Can you tell us a little bit about why you use the term EL instead of ELL or ESL?
Yes, so I can tell you what I know as an English learner teacher in Nashville. We use the acronym EL, which stands for English learner, and that will apply to any student with a non-English language background. So even if a student enters school and they are seemingly proficient in English and proficient in Spanish, and they wouldn't consider themselves an English language learner, their family might not consider them learners anymore, they might think that they've mastered the language, we can still categorize them as English learner because English was not their first learner. And then by doing that, it kind of broadens the amount of students that we can give services to under the EL department.
So Leslie, technically, if a student maybe started off speaking French at home, and from that was their primary language in the home as they were growing up, but they also started to learn English, and they came to kindergarten, for instance, fluent in what their family felt like fluent, they were they knew both languages, they could still be considered an EL student and get support if needed because that was their second language. Is that correct?
Yeah. And even if they don't necessarily need support in the classroom, like they don't need the vocabulary reinforcements and the small learning techniques throughout the day, an EL teacher is more aware of services available to the family, like translation services or parent outreach opportunities. So that French family might need other things in the city, and the teacher that they have in Nashville would be able to help, you know, in touch with people with those services.
Oh, that's unbelievable. And I think back to even when we were teaching where we did in Chicago and most of our family spoke Spanish, I loved parent-teacher conferences, and I loved when the parents came in and maybe English wasn't a strength of theirs, but they would try to speak English to me and I would try to speak Spanish back. We had a lot of laughter over that. But I love that what you're pointing out about the teacher just being more aware of that family environment and the supports that are available for that family. That's amazing. We're going to take a quick break just to remind all of you how you can get a hold of me. So I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Twitter at @ConoverCarrie. You can reach me via email, carrie@cincg.com, or visit me on my website for links and other information at www.conoverinnovativeconsulting.com. What we like to do here on E2E is share out three concepts or three ideas that you can walk away from. This all stemmed from a book I read many years ago. That really emphasize that our brain works well in threes and that we remember things in threes. So I really translated this to my own classroom in our note-taking and in the lessons that we did. And so I transferred that over to this podcast, and I like to share things out in threes. I want you to be able to listen to this podcast on your way to work, you know, maybe on your prep period when you're having a cup of coffee and grading papers, you can throw on E2E and just really get re-energized and reassured that you're doing the right things in your classroom. So today, Leslie's gonna share out three ideas all around English learners. And so Leslie, let's get started with your first concept that you wanna share out today.
Okay, so my first concept, which would be by far the most important concept, and I think it could apply to any classroom, but especially to a classroom with English learners, is establishing a social and emotional climate that makes all students feel safe and comfortable in their classroom. So the way that I do this in my classroom is by using morning meeting. Morning meeting is a concept that's not new in education, but I guess I have my own version of morning meeting. And it really consists of three different parts. The three parts give the student an opportunity to talk with one another, to prepare themselves for the day, and also a safe space to share. And by doing this, I feel like these kids then are prepared for the day ahead of them, and they know they will not be laughed at, they can be comfortable sharing things, especially when they're learning English. It is very intimidating for them to speak out loud in front of other people. And by using this morning meeting, they do that, and they do it daily, and it becomes just part of their routine, and really it helps them let go of that fear within the classroom.
Oh my gosh, I absolutely loved that. I think morning meetings are so important at any grade. Like, they change from kindergarten to eighth grade, right, into high school, but I had never thought about the fact that by making that a safe environment, those English learners, those EL students, get to practice their speaking in a safe environment. That is incredible. And can you tell us more about some of the activities you use in morning meeting, Leslie, and what grades do you think that these activities would be appropriate?
So I have the most experience teaching in fourth grade at this point, so pretty much everything that I'm discussing pertains to a fourth grade class. However, you can see how you could change this for any grade. And just from experience, I have had years where I have tried to cut out my morning meeting, cut down my morning meeting, or just kind of do away with it. And I just cannot have a successful classroom without it. It is that important. So when my kids come into the classroom, there would be a message on the board. And the message is very generic, saying something like, "Good morning, boys and girls. Today is a very special day where you will get to be a detective during reading. Please find one friend who knows what the word detective means." So this gives the kids an opportunity to move around the classroom, to talk with their friends. Even if they're not talking about what the detective means, they're using their voices, they're talking to one another. If a student doesn't speak English or doesn't speak the same language as the student sitting next to them, they are working out ways to communicate with one another, you know, kind of pointing, saying, "Do you want to be my partner?" Or "Let's do this together." And just all these different ways to communicate without the language. So after they find their partner, when the majority of the students get into the classroom, the second part would be a circle on the rug, like a community circle, where we would all sit in a circle, myself included, and do some sort of activity depending on the time that we had. This is really when the kids get to share anything that they must share that day, that if they don't say, they won't be able to concentrate all day.
So, I love that. I absolutely love that.
If you have a 9-year-old who got a new puppy over the weekend, they're not going to do anything for you until they can tell you about their puppy.
Yes.
Give them the opportunity to do that before the day gets started. I mean, that is very, very important to them.
Yep. I love that. That's so true. I mean, it's kind of true for adults too. Like, I think about, you know, the workplace, or you go to a meeting somewhere, and if you don't have that time almost to kind of socialize with people to get your day started, it helps you release all that stuff on your mind and reset for, okay, now I'm in a learning environment or in a work environment. So I can relate as an adult, yeah. Honestly.
I know. Or, you know, they're trying to get that information to their peers in an inappropriate time. So
yes.
When I'm having that, and to the next activity, they're still trying to whisper to their friend about their new dog. So giving them the space to do that is very important.
Yeah. And I think we do feel pressure, right? Like, as time ticks and the school year goes on, we feel pressure to cram things in. We were talking about this, gosh, probably talked about classroom management in every single one of these podcasts. But classroom management, when we were talking to Kelly, it was like, slow down to go fast, right? Like, slow down and take the time to do these things, and it will pay off later. Even though you probably think sometimes like, oh, I could be cramming spelling into that time or reviewing for, you know, the science assessment that's coming up. I agree with you. Like, this is just so essential.
Yeah, I mean, that is so true. And just from experience, I have tried, because for a while, a morning meeting or a community circle was mandated by our district. So for a while it was, you know, essential, and it was a focus in our professional development, and all of the discussed repeatedly. It wasn't mandated anymore, and something else was. And so when we didn't have to do it, it kind of got cut out or it got smaller, and it came back all the time to haunt me. If I didn't do this morning meeting for that one day or that one week, you could see the effects all week.
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing.
So then the last part of the morning meeting is a simple greeting. And the purpose of the greeting is just speaking out loud in English, learning people's names. And so I would always do something like, "Have a marvelous Monday." And then each person would turn to the person next to them and say, you know, "Have a marvelous Monday, Diego." And then Diego would turn and say, "Have a marvelous Monday, Mary." All around the circle. And really what I realized from this, which is very sad, a couple of my students, this was the only time they spoke out loud the whole day.
Whoa. Wow.
And it's really hard as a teacher when you realize that, because you just want to make sure you're providing them those opportunities. And if this was the only one I was providing them, you know, I needed to do a better job, but then at least they got that one opportunity.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting you say that. I was thinking about, you know, you and I both worked in large, large urban districts that had, at times, I think my first year of teaching, I had 34 fourth graders in our 100-year-old building. And I loved that class. But there were days that I would close the door at the end of the day and I would be like, was so-and-so even in school today? I mean, of course I took attendance, right? But like, the day would fly by, our classrooms were crowded, we were trying to squeeze so much in, and I'm like, I really tried so hard to look every kid in the eye and be like, hey, I see you, I hear you, you're here today, I'm so glad you're here. But it was tough, right? And so I love that about that morning meeting. And you probably can tell a lot from, you know, if something had happened at home with that kid or they were in a sad mood or super happy, very energetic. I'm sure that one phrase even gave you a lot of context to help you, you know, get to know that student.
Yeah, you know, and something you said, when you said, hey, I'm glad you're here. One thing I realized having these refugee students, that was not a phrase that they heard very often. As they were displaced and as they were moved from all of these different situations, you know, those kids, they definitely felt like they were burdens at times. Yeah. And so just as a teacher saying to them, hey, I'm so glad you're here, or have a marvelous Monday, it's going to be a great day, with a smile, that could be, you know, the only time that they hear those words or that they feel that feeling of welcomeness.
Yep. And I think so that really translates.
It really is an important.
Yeah. That translates to kids who, you know, we had kids coming into our classroom that didn't eat breakfast or maybe dinner the night before, or, you know, saw things that, you know, weren't what 9-year-olds were supposed to see. And I truly believe that we, all the teachers at our school and in our community, were creating these safe, loving environments where they did feel safe. So congratulations, Leslie. I have goosebumps head to toe listening to you talk about this. And I know how much an amazing environment you make for those kids. Before we move on to Leslie's second concept, I want to extend an invitation to all of you to join me here on Educators to Educators. If you're an educator out there who would like to share some of your knowledge with a broader audience, I would love to have you as a guest on Educators to Educators. So please feel free to reach out to me at carrie@ccincg.com and we'll get you on the podcast. We have some really amazing guests coming up in the next month or so. So stay tuned. Go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes so you get updates when we add a new podcast. I'm really excited about some of the guests we have coming in the next few weeks. And with that being said, if you love Educators to Educators, you know how you could really help me grow this podcast? Go to the iTunes store, review us, write a review, give us those 5 stars. So we can keep spreading the educator to educator love. So let's get back to Leslie. Leslie, what is the second concept you want to talk about today for EL learners?
So obviously conversations between kids are great, but academic conversations are much better. We seem to kind of set up naturally an environment where we tell kids to stop talking. You need to stop talking and you need to get to work, or you need to stop talking and you need to follow these directions. And it's important to remember that when you're learning a language, you learn to listen and to speak faster than you learn to read and to write. So giving kids the opportunity to speak prior to them writing down whatever you're going to have them write down can really help them with that writing piece. Mm-hmm. I use what's called accountable talk, and I had different sentence stems depending on the activity that I would be doing. And the sentence stems would just help the kids have these academic conversations. So, for example, if I was teaching science and I was introducing new words, and one of the words was energy, I might have a sentence stem that says, I think the word energy means blank. The clues I used from the reading are blank, blank, blank. And so the kids would say that sentence stem and they would fill in the blanks with their partners before they went to do a vocabulary activity.
That's great. And that really helped them. Because I think if you said to them, what does this word mean? Turn to your partner and tell them what the word, you know, detective means. Or that could be really scary for some kid.
Yeah. The other thing is that a lot of times kids don't have academic conversations. They might have learned a lot of the social words they need in English. You know, they can talk to a friend on the playground or they can discuss the previous night's soccer game. But when it comes to things like school words, you know, the meaning of this vocabulary word, they don't know what those academic things are. And if they do, they don't often get a chance to practice them.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully by helping them have these conversations, that's a skill that they'll take with them, you know, forever. You'll always want them to be having academic conversations or conversations of what they're learning all the way through their education.
Yeah. Wow. That's so powerful. And I think it really allows, I mean, that's a good practice to have in any classroom, really, right? But really can see how this would, I love what you said about how we're constantly tending to say, like, stop talking, be quiet, stop talking. And I back to, like, the good classroom management. Like, if you know, have good routines in your classroom, even these sentence stems, right? Your students know, okay, if they kind of quiet down and listen to you for 1 or 2 minutes while you give directions, they're going to get to do a lot of talking after that. And it's just such a great reminder that that's how they learn first, is the listening and speaking.
Right. And I feel the sentence stems are extremely practical. Like, you can use any version of these in any subject at any level. You can scaffold where they're filling in just one word in the sentence until the end of the year, where eventually they're coming up with them on their own. This is like one of the most basic techniques that with modeling and repetition can be so effective.
Yeah. Sometimes it's about going back to the basics with teaching. I really believe that, like, no matter how much technology we infuse and STEM and all of these amazing things we're doing in education right now, sometimes you just really have to go back to the basics, and that will bleed into everything else. Like you said, it can go into any subject area. So
yeah, I mean, there's a reason these things have stuck around for so long.
Exactly. So let's move on to your concept number 3, which is about, you know, vocab overload and read alouds.
I remember this. I read when I was getting my degree in English as a second language that on average, kids can learn 3 new words a day. And that's if those words are reviewed throughout the week. So if you think about in a school setting, each week you're going to do a new story, you're going to give them 10 reading words. Every time you do a new science unit, you're going to give them 10 science words. When they go to music, there's music vocabulary. And there's just so many words thrown at these kids that the idea of retaining all of these words just seems impossible. And that's not even counting your academic words that you use in a school setting, like following procedure, the word procedure, or we're going to have a discussion about this topic, word discussion. So all of those new words is just a lot to throw at kids.
Yep.
So teachers have a tendency to follow this routine of front-loading vocabulary. Here are your new words. Here's what the word means with a picture, and here's the word used in a sentence. That's always how I did it until I learned a different technique. So I found that by using a read-aloud to introduce a new topic and introduce some new vocabulary, the kids begin to make connections with things they already know. They use their current schema, they bring all of their ideas to the forefront, and they start to make connections, which then will lead to this retention of vocabulary. So I'll give you just a very basic example. In fourth grade in Nashville, we teach for science, Esther, about the Earth's surface and how it changes over time. And we use words like weathering and erosion and just some really difficult vocabulary. So I have a 2-year-old son, and one of his favorite books is Where Do Diggers Sleep? And a digger is, I don't know what the correct term is. You know what a digger is. You see them at construction sites. They dig dirt up and they move dirt.
Yep.
So I was reading Where Do Diggers Sleep with Mason at Home, and I thought, you know, this would be great before I teach the science unit. And so I told the kids, I borrowed this book from Mason, and I want to share it with you because it's just a silly book. And it really is silly. It's not at their level. It's significantly below. But it uses a lot of the words that I'm going to have the kids use during the science unit. So by reading the book first, and it talked about diggers, and they move earth and dirt and construction and just different, I can't remember all of the different construction equipment that was referenced. But it gave them this whole picture, this whole book picture, and then also a picture in their mind of where I was going with this lesson. Yeah. Yep. You know, we were going to be talking about dirt.
Yeah.
That's just a very basic example of making these connections prior to teaching this big unit. I'm sure I could find a more appropriate book at their level and do a read aloud that way. But I found that this was pretty effective too, and it was very quick, and it just helped us get started by giving them a little bit of background to help them make these connections.
And Leslie, how do you handle, you know, if you had a class where you had students who were reading way above the fourth grade level, and you had students who were, you know, still learning English, did you ever struggle with students being like, well, oh, that's, you know, too easy for me or babyish? Or did you, how did you combat that?
Honestly, our classroom climate that we set up with our morning meeting, I would never have a student say that's too easy for me. Because I think they would know that would be offensive to someone who was learning.
Yep.
And they really became, and this is true of most of the classes that I've had, they really became kind of a united group, and, you know, they wanted everyone to succeed. So someone who thought that this was too easy for them might say to someone else, oh, I've read this book before, or I can help you if you need help, because I already know these words, you know, and try to help a classmate instead of saying something that might offend them.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us on E2E today. I know I learned a lot just hearing you speak about, you know, the importance of a morning meeting, setting that tone, those academic sentence stems that you're using with students that can be used K through 12. And then also really, really important message you sent about that vocab overload and how you combat that with read alouds with your students. So before we let you go, two final questions for you. The first one is, you're a teacher listening to this podcast right now. You have a new student who's come to your classroom who does not speak English. What would you do, and how would you help that student to really start to feel comfortable in your classroom?
So in that situation, the student doesn't speak English. The most important thing you can do is to make sure that student knows that you are so happy that you get to be their teacher. And either you use Google Translate, you have another classmate help you, you find your district translator, or you communicate via pictures, you know, draw yourself with a big happy face. Just make sure that student knows that you're glad they're there.
That's amazing. I love that. And I'm just as you're saying that, I was picturing myself as like a little 9-year-old standing in front of you, drawing a picture of yourself smiling. And I think I would like that a lot. So, great advice. And I guess my final question, are there any books that you could share out with anyone that maybe one book that's really influenced your teaching?
Well, I've read so many books over the years, and a lot have done things, but there is a morning meeting book. It's called The Morning Meeting Book by Lexanne Creek. And this one was given to us when our district mandated the morning meeting. And I still reference that book for ideas on how to change up my morning meeting or different morning messages. And really, because I value the morning meeting so much, I would say that book would be my number one recommendation.
Well, thank you all so much for joining Leslie and I today to talk about English learners in the classroom. I know I've learned a lot. I'm sure you have. I'm really looking forward to you joining me on my next episode of E2E. But until then, I want to remind you to keep on teaching on.